David Wilcock, and we're very happy to be invited to his humble abode, which is not so humble, and won't say where. And David, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Carrie. I've had the opportunity to be in the right place at the right time on many occasions with some really amazing people. And I've had a lot of really interesting experiences of my own, going all the way back to very early in my life. I read this book actually when I was 7 years old. It's called How to Make ESP Work for You by Harold Sherman. This book talks about ESP as if it were something that most people didn't understand, didn't know about. And that surprised me. Most kids in my grade were reading Clifford the Big Red Dog. And this book was obviously a lot more intense than anything most kids would read at my age. There were no pictures. It was kind of scary. You're looking at these little bitty words and trying to, follow it. But I was just so fascinated as a child with the concepts that I just got into it. And the other thing that I felt really drawn to at that age was books on hypnosis. And I read both of these books beginning when I was 7 years old as well. I somehow felt that there was a connection between hypnosis and ESP, and didn't understand why I felt that way until much later. The next book that I really read was Erica Cheatham's Nostradamus Prophecies, 1985 and Beyond. This is when I first got into the idea that there was going to be some kind of event around the year 2000, which Nostradamus scholars typically would say is a cataclysmic event, a nasty event. And I saw that special on HBO where the Russian nuclear missiles are going to blow up the U.S. And they had Orson Welles narrating, and he goes into great detail about Nostradamus' prophecies. What triggered, why would a seven-year-old kid read books like this? Why would you be inspired to conduct such research at such a young age? I was unusually intelligent, but more importantly, when I was 5 years old, I had a really pivotal event in my life, which was an out-of-body experience. I woke up in the middle of the night, and I was floating over my own body in bed, and I looked down and saw myself breathing, so it was clear that I was still alive. But I couldn't make sense out of why I was in two places at the same time and why I still had these funny yellow pajamas with the red cuffs. Well, the event had such an impact on me that I saved the pajamas. They became sacred pajamas, and I never washed them again. I never wore them again. These pajamas were in two places at once, and I didn't understand how that could be, and so they became very sacred to me. I wake up the next morning, very excited. I tell my father, and he says, "Oh, you just had a dream." I went to school, and I told the kindergarten teacher, Mrs. DeMazzi. She says, "You just had a dream." Now, bear in mind, I was a typical silly kid. Mrs. DeMazzi told my friend Chris and myself to go trim the Christmas tree, and so we proceeded to take our little scissors and start cutting branches off the tree. So, I did kid things. I had rocks in my pocket and paper clips and gumballs. But at the same time, once this out-of-body thing happened, I saved the pajamas and I said, I got to get another chance, because if I hadn't have been afraid, I wouldn't have stayed in the house and I probably would have gone somewhere really fascinating. And I had so many UFO dreams where in some cases I would end up talking to someone who looked like, after I saw the movie Star Wars, it became Obi-Wan Kenobi. And he said that something really amazing was going to happen in the future on Earth, and that I had some kind of role in it, and that I would be guided. And most of the conversations I couldn't remember when I woke up, but I would be so overwhelmed with the emotion of the loss of this contact with him that I would wake up and just be devastated by the fact that I had lost that connection.
If we fast forward from that, which is a wonderful introduction to who you are today, you at some point became aware that you could be the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce.
Right. I did read the ESP book, and he said, the younger you are when you start doing these exercises, the more psychic you'll be. I'm like, I'm already 7 years old. What am I? I'm never going to be very good now. Should have been doing this since I was two. I read this book, Stephen LaBerge, Lucid Dreaming, and then Exploring the World of Lucid Dreaming in high school, and was able to have lucid dreams based on the techniques in this book. I would end up on the main deck of UFOs and talking to beings, and I would... LaBerge's perspective is, hey, this is just your mind. There's nothing real about any of this stuff. So I would just wake up and laugh and be like, none of this means anything. College, I quit using alcohol and all intoxicating chemicals. I did smoke some marijuana, and I quit that in my sophomore year. 6 months later, a friend comes in to my room. He had traveled a long distance to see me, and he was white as a sheet of paper, and he said, I got to tell somebody what just happened. What are you talking about? He said, I just had a conversation with my physics professor, and he said UFOs are real. Give me a break, man. Come on. So, but I was curious enough that I had him keep talking, and he basically said the physics professor offhandedly mentioned UFOs are real, and he was the star pupil, so after class, he talked to the professor, and he said, the professor said, yeah, we know this is true, we meaning NASA. He had worked in the higher echelons of NASA for 11 years. We know this is true, but we're never going to let it go out on the main headline of the New York Times. And the reason why is that we shock tested the public with War of the Worlds and found out that they really can't handle the truth because they're going to think that they're being invaded. They're going to think, you know, they're going to panic. The economy is going to go belly up. So we just can't let this out. So there's a gradual indoctrination going on, getting people into this information. He said that the ship had a panel all the way around the bottom, and they pulled it off expecting to see components inside, and instead all they saw was this ceramic. So for a couple of years they didn't know what they were looking at, and they finally looked at the ceramic under magnification, high magnification, and saw all these lines on it. It turns out that this was a gigantic computer chip that ran the whole width of the ship, and it was a superconducting ceramic material, which means that electrons would flow through it without any loss. Now, from this, the professor said that we got fiber optics. They found burnt edges of fiber optic cables in the ships. We got Teflon, the nonstick material. It's a special material. We got Kevlar, bulletproof vests, came from reverse engineering. Laser beams passed between two mirrors. One of them is semi-permeable. A beam comes out. Lasers came from the ships. LED lights came from the ships. Infrared night vision came from the ships. They looked through the porthole windows and they saw this green you could see outside at night. And computer chips, obviously. So what this really means is that most of the technology that we now have, including the technology that's recording my voice and that we're filming with, would not exist if it were not for this sort of celestial inheritance that we got in the 40s. Well, that just screwed my head right off. And for 2 weeks, I'd be walking down the street, I'd see a manhole cover, I think of UFOs. I'd go to the cafeteria, I'd have a plate on my... I'd be eating off this plate thinking of UFOs. I just couldn't get it out of my mind. After 2 weeks' time, I said, if this is real, and I believed it was, because he went into propulsion systems, how they could get to light speed. He went into three different types of occupants they found in the ships. If this is real, it's the most important thing there could possibly be to study. I finished college and I got my bachelor's degree in psychology and I got a PhD in UFOs. This was the director of communications for the Apollo missions. Okay, this guy is the real deal, high-end NASA scientist who came forward in 1995 to say that they had discovered ruins on the moon, architecture on the moon. Well, this book went into so much detail about ancient civilizations and obviously showing that some sort of intelligence interfaced with ancient civilizations to get us to where we are now and to create these artifacts that we find all around the world. I became quite compelled with the evidence he presented, showing me that there had to have been a civilization that was highly advanced before our current one, which in most people's mind, you think of BC, you think of cavemen, right? Well, BC is only, 100 generations ago, and that's not a whole lot of time, really. So, basically speaking, we have a much older history. So all this stuff is coming into my mind. I had started to write my dreams down when I got sober. That was part of my recovery process, because dreaming is a very important part of the lucid dreaming process. You have to capture a dream when it comes in and then meditate on it and visualize yourself becoming lucid, meaning that you say, oh my God, I'm in a dream. I can levitate things. I can fly. I can snap my fingers and go to a whole different place. I can create people to talk to. I can create objects. I mean, I've had a number of these, and they are absolutely fantastic. But you have to remember your dreams and then repeat this line to yourself. Next time I'm dreaming, I want to remember to recognize that I'm dreaming. That's the key line. Next time I'm dreaming, I want to remember to recognize that I'm dreaming. So I already had a lot of experience remembering dreams. So I start remembering dreams, and I start getting all this information coming in from books. I read 500 books in 3 years. I had a list of all of them, and I submitted my application in the Naropa Institute, which is a graduate school in Boulder, Colorado, on transpersonal psychology, which is sort of like metaphysical psychology. And I handed them this list, and I said, name any book, and I'll give you a discourse on it. And I didn't get accepted, probably because my financial situation wasn't very good. Came back from Boulder. Now we're into 1996. I'd been doing this research for 3 years. And I was like, okay, why am I so compelled? Why can I not stop reading these books? I'm just so obsessed. There's got to be something more to this. I start having dreams in which UFOs fly overhead, and something shoots out of the UFO, and it comes spinning down, lands on the ground, and it's a telephone. And it starts ringing. Oh, shit. Yeah. Wow. And then I had this other dream where this E.T. kind of walked up to me, and all these books start flying out from behind it like a cyclone, and they're hitting me in the face, and it hurts, kind of. But as each book is flying past me, all these books that I'd read, it's like all the knowledge in the book comes into my mind at once. And I start seeing how it all fits together in this dream. It was like this incredible, telepathic, overwhelming blast. And I woke up, and I'm like, what does this mean? It's almost like they're saying, you know, because if you're watching these videos and you're into the UFO subject, you kind of say to yourself, yeah, it's all out there, right? It's all something I'm reading about. This is like it comes into your mind. It's personal. It's part of you now. And it's what they want to talk to me. They want to have a conversation. They, meaning whoever they is. What finally happened was I had a dream that said, okay, here's what's going to happen. You'll be able to hear, it was a ghost that was talking to me in the dream, and he said, you can hear me, but nobody else can. So I'll tell you what to say, and then you just dictate it into a tape recorder. So here I am. I've read 500 books. I get on the internet. And by this point, I had come across material called Ascension, or some people were calling it Pole Shift. I read the Nostradamus stuff, so I said, well, what's really going on here? Now, up until this point, I had almost entirely read empirical, science-oriented books about ufology, about metaphysics, about Atlantis. However, at this point, I started to get more into the possibility that somebody could intuitively communicate with these guys. I found a book by Dr. Norman Milanovic called We the Arcturians. And I wasn't 100% convinced, but I was relatively compelled by it. Then I found a book by Dr. Scott Mandelker called From Elsewhere. And I don't have it in front of me here, but this book says on the cover, the subculture of those who claim to be of non-earthly origins. And I looked at it in the store, and I'm like, this guy is really far out. But I held the book between my hands, which I would do, psychometry, and it was tingling so incredibly. It was like it was electrical. Wow. All right. So I looked opened the book to the back, and it said, if you can answer these 12 questions in the affirmative about yourself, then you very likely are an extraterrestrial soul in a human body who's forgotten who you really are. Now, this is really far out, way, way fringe stuff, but by this point, I'd read 500 books on the fringe. It's like, okay. I start reading these questions, and it's like the most personal, insightful, almost invasive psychological description of who I really was underneath the mask that I'd ever seen. And I couldn't believe it. He doesn't even know me, and yet he knows me better than anybody, even my parents. How did that happen? And he's saying that this has to do with being an extraterrestrial soul in a human body. So I just devoured this book. This was in November of 1995, after I graduated college in 95. I go to my friend Jude's house. Jude and I did music together a lot, because I'm also a drummer and a composer. And Jude and I did automatic writing together on his suggestion, where you hold the pencil in your left hand, let it do what it wants to do. And I didn't think it was going to work. I thought it was kind of hokey. But we really meditated, and I felt this conscious connection to my third eye and trying to pull in energy from there. And all of a sudden, and the question we asked was, am I a wanderer, which is what they call these extraterrestrial souls. Am I a wanderer? I start feeling something coming in really strong, and I pull here really strong. And for all of 2 or 3 seconds, my left hand jumped into activity and did all this stuff. And I dropped the pen. Oh, my God. Jude, turn on the lights. Something happened, man. This is crazy. So we turn on the lights, and the paper looked completely white. It was like, oh, what the hell? But then we looked really close, and it was very, very faint pencil. And it says, my hand had written forward and backward on the same line, and there were curves that intersected, and only because they collided with each other did it say, Christ cometh. Now, I was not raised to be Christian. I went to the Presbyterian Church maybe 4 times in my life. My mother had had a Bible upbringing, and then she really rebelled from it and got away from it. Christ cometh, and then the TH of cometh looked like the word Ra. Well, that's like the Egyptian god or something. What's that all about? Well, in the book that I had been reading from Scott Manilker, the entity that he based all this stuff on was called Ra. And it was a series of four books originally, then five, called The Law of One. So after this happened, there was more than that. There was an encoded message. It said EC 40, 57, and oxen. And the and was a little ampersand symbol. The oxen I understood, I'd worked at a fair over the summer, and I bought a statue of an ox, which I thought represented my becoming a beast of burden in the working world. And the woman was from Kenya, and I said, well, what does this animal mean? And she says, oh, you American, always think symbol, something means something. Okay, well, this is an ox, right? You hitch it up to a plow, and it plows the field for you. She says, no, it's water buffalo, very dangerous. You get within 500 feet of this, you pray for death. So that surprised me. I said, okay, that means that somehow all this stuff I'm going through is going to help me be really strong. And going through the working world doesn't mean I'm going to be submerged, because I got out of college and I'd had my bills paid, I'd had all the books I could read, and then I had to support myself with like minimum wage jobs, and I did not want to be doing that. So I felt like I was going to be this burden, this beast of burden. Instead, the water buffalo is a powerful symbol. So here I am, months later. By this point, I'd gotten fired from the mental ward for being too friendly to the patients. And there's this EC 4057 at the beginning. Well, Jude says, hey, EC, isn't that like Bible, like Ecclesiastes? And it says Christ, right? So, okay. So we found the Bible, and there was no verse 40. But then we remembered, or Jude remembered, the whole chapter verse thing only happened later. Originally, you measured it by the number of verses from the beginning. So we counted 40 verses from the beginning. I'd just gotten fired from the mental ward, right? That's why I was upstate where my family was. Well, the first line says, for what hath a man toiled and labored under the sun? This too is meaningless. Then the very last line, line 57, said, to eat and drink and be happy in one's toil, this is the grace of God. So it was like somebody was up there with the Bible saying, all right, let's give him this. And then my hand does this thing, and it says, Christ cometh, and then it gives me a Bible quote, and it mentions the ox about my work, and then the Bible quote is about work, and in the middle was that famous line, which was turned into the song, Turn, 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 by the Birds, to everything there is a purpose, to everything there is a season, and time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to gather stones together, you know, all those things, all those opposites, and I was at a real turning point in my life. So I felt, okay, this is really powerful, crazy, but what do you do with it? I mean, after that, life just kind of returned to normal. So a few months later, I get this bill from my ex-girlfriend. I had a Japanese girlfriend in college, and we'd had a big, long argument on the phone, and I got a phone bill for like $200 or something, and I couldn't pay it, and I freaked out because it was going to make me broke. I was working for $5.77 an hour, taking care of developmentally disabled people in a residence facility, and I started screaming and crying, and I said, if you're out there, I want the fucking proof right now. I'm sorry. Just beep that or something.
No, okay, cool. No, really, I mean, it's fine.
People have told me I shouldn't swear, so.
Okay.
So if you're out there, I want the proof, and I want it right now. Okay? So, and then I'm looking out the window and seeing if there's going to be UFOs in the window. Nothing happened. And then I'm trying to levitate this napkin on my plate, and it didn't levitate. My friend ended up calling, and he was going through AA and rehabilitation, and I realized, you know, I'm a heck of a lot better off than he is right now. And by the end of the night, I'd forgotten about it. Next morning, my buddy had a housemate, and he delivered pizza. He didn't even get home until after I went to bed that night. So he slept in until like 10 or 11 in the morning, and we had a rule, don't call us in the morning, period. So this one morning, the next morning after this happened, I get this little itch to go outside, start the car, so that I could warm it up because it was wintertime, really freezing outside. So I go out, I start up my Subaru, I come back inside, and there's Eric with pillow creases on his face, and he's on the phone. Okay, why is he on the phone? He hangs up the phone, he says, dude, I had a really strange dream about you. And I'm like, I can't listen to your dream. I got to go to work. I'm late. Yeah, but this had UFOs. All these UFOs were in it, man. Okay. I'm listening. Right? So I'm listening. So he starts going into this dream in which this whole fleet of UFOs flies overhead. And people start panicking and running, and they're all hiding under things. It was like a big mall, but there was no ceiling on the mall. And everybody evacuates except for my ex-girlfriend, and he didn't even know that I'd had this event happen about her, and him and me. One UFO stayed, and this pillar of light comes down, and there's a flat disc on the bottom, okay? And there's a man standing on the disc wearing a white robe and sandals, but it clearly was not Jesus because he had gray hair and a gray beard. Is like a wise old man archetype. Well, he starts doing this discourse, and he says, we are your brothers, your long-lost family. You came from us, we came from you, we came from the one. We are all one, we are all connected. We are here now at this time because you are about to go through this amazing, fantastic, energetic enlightenment of your entire planet. Right now you're only seeing the bad part where you have the earth changes and you have the upheavals in your government and you're starting to see the rottenness in your society, but what comes after this is a golden age, far more incredible than you could ever imagine. And we are here to help you through this transition. So he eventually stopped. He gave this whole ascension discourse. And he's just standing there. And the girl says to Eric, shouldn't somebody go talk to him? And Eric says, well, I'll leave that to Dave. He's the UFO guy. He'll know what to say. So apparently they kind of prodded me along. This is his dream. I walk up to the guy, and he recognizes me. And we say some strange word to each other that wasn't in English, and then we hug each other. And he has his arm around me, and he looks at Eric very serious now, and he says, it is very important that you know that he is one of us. So Eric tells me all this, right? So then I didn't even have time to think about it. I'm like, oh my God, okay, that's the whole dream. Great, got to go. And I'm like driving to work and I'm passing people. And I get to work and it's a terrible day. And then I got out from work and I was going to go visit my mother. So the next thing you know, I'm on the New York State Thruway driving north up to Albany. It's pouring rain. My windshield is fogging over. I can't see anything. It's very deadly. I might not even make it alive. I'm hydroplaning as I'm driving. And all of a sudden, in this condition where I'm just almost in tears already from that day and just such a terrible day, I realize, wait a minute. I asked a question the night before in prayer, basically, and I got the answer. And the answer is yes. You are, you know, one of us. I pulled the car over to the side of the road, and I just lost it. I mean, I knew in that moment that there was something I was here to do. And you know, when you really bring yourself back to that point where you first heard it, it's still just as potent as when it happened. And so my experience after that was again like, okay, what's next? What's going to happen now? That's when I started to get these dreams saying that we want to communicate with you. The year after I first had the automatic writing, I had now joined Richard Hoagland's discussion group online and met a guy named Joe Mason who had created a website soon afterwards called greatdreams.com. And he talked about something he called the dream voice. And he said, when you wake up in the morning and you can first remember your dreams, listen to the background noise in your mind and just write it down, no matter how cryptic it is or how nonsensical it sounds. Don't analyze it. That's the most important part. Do not try to understand it. Do not pay attention to it. Just let it flow through you and write it all down. Well, I was up so late and he's telling me all this great information. I'm falling asleep and I'm just trying to write it. I wake up in the morning and it's like I can still hear his voice. So I just start writing it down. And I get all the way done and I have 8 pages of material and it's weird. It almost sounded like schizophrenic ranting. But it said some very interesting things. And one of the things it said was, you should visit Chichen Itza, the Mayan pyramids. You can go there with your mind. Okay? You can go there with your mind. Well, that's astral projection. That's something I've been wanting to do all these years. I had the lucid dreams, but I'd never really been able to walk out of my body from a conscious state. I really wanted to be able to do that. So I'm reading this for the second time, really understanding it, and the phone starts ringing. And it felt like there was this tugging energy on me from the phone. Hello? Hey, Dave, this is your buddy from the Pine Bush UFO group. You want to come to a seminar on astral projection? I know that it's not likely that anybody's really going to want to believe this, but, I mean, this is what really happened. I tried to get to the seminar. I got lost on the highway. I never made it. I ended up having to come home. So there were a lot of really synchronistic events happening. I started to get these readings. On the first day, it also said, one of our women, Teresa, a sibling, inoperative, the Christian, psychically. One of our women, Teresa, Mother Teresa, a sibling, mother. One of our women, Teresa, a sibling, inoperative. Something went wrong. Something's with her health, maybe, right? The Christian, Mother Teresa, the Christian. One of our women, Teresa, a sibling, inoperative, the Christian, psychically. 5 days later, Mother Teresa had a massive heart attack. Oh my gosh, right? So then a little while later, and this is one of the stories I tell in the book, which we'll get to in a second, I did a reading for my housemate, Eric, and it said to him, you would be happy to know that your student loans for New Paltz have come in. And this is the college we were going to, State University of New York at New Paltz. Well, that didn't make any sense because he graduated from New Paltz already. So I actually asked it to be rephrased, and it said, you'll be happy to know your student loans have come in. You should visit New Paltz. So I told Eric about all this, and he was now a graduate student at SUNY Albany. Well, about a month and a half later, he walks into the house. He says, dude, you better sit down for this one. What's going on, man? He says, New Paltz called my mother. They were cleaning out the bursar's office, the financial office. And there was a file cabinet up against the wall. It was one of the last things they had to remove. They pulled the file cabinet away from the wall. There's an envelope behind the file cabinet. Inside the envelope was a check made out to me, Eric, for $900, uncashed Stafford loan. And we needed about $879 to be able to pay our rent. So this was just like, wow. How did they? And then you start going through these loops in your mind, like, okay, how could this possibly have been done? What started to happen was that I would have a stack of cassette tapes. I would get about a month behind a lot of times on my transcriptions of this. I would dictate my dreams and I would dictate whatever words I heard. The words were basically like a wisdom teaching, talking to me and saying, you know, spiritual principles, spiritual growth. Talking about this ascension, saying there's this amazing thing that's going to come in your future. The whole planet is going to be going through this shift into a golden age. But I would get behind, and I'd have these stacks of tapes. And I would sit down a month after I dictated it or whatever. I'd start transcribing, and it would describe what I was doing right before I sat down at the computer over and over and over again. You may remember that back in the 90s, there was this little toy called a Tamagotchi, this little orange plastic thing, and little teenage girls would have it on their belts, and it was like a little chicken, and you'd feed the chicken by hitting the button. And so I had just gotten back from the convenience store. I saw a little girl with one of these things on her belt playing with it. I get home, pop in the tape, start transcribing it. And in the dream, I'm saying, I'm seeing this little girl with some strange orange toy on her belt. A couple years later, another really dramatic story was I had a girlfriend at the time, Sabrina, as I call her on the website. And she came in to the house, and I was transcribing. And she says, I got this really great story. You're going to love this. You stop the tape. Okay, cool. I just met this guy at the ARE. This is the Edgar Cayce Institute. I was now living in Virginia Beach at the time because the Cayce readings had said it was a safety land, and I felt that was a trustworthy thing, safe from earth changes or whatever. So she says, yeah, this guy just stopped in for one day. He's an old friend of mine, and he was telling me about this building where the top floor was built to look like a UFO. Little porthole windows you could look at. It was really neat. So I say, oh, that's cool. So then I go back, and I hit play, and I'm transcribing. I'm seeing a building with the top floor looking like a UFO. So I'm like, come over here. Hit play and took my headphones off, and we're just looking at each other like, you know, the hairs are standing up, right? Oh, my God. So long, long story short, I'm getting all these synchronicities all the time, and I'm saying this is world-class data, but do you think I want to go public about being extraterrestrial communicator? Heck no. I'm working for $577 an hour in a developmental disability facility. The last thing I want to do is end up in the mental ward again, but as a patient, not as an employee. So I'm living this double life. By day I'm working, and at night I come home and I'm transcribing tapes. And these readings are coming through, and they're beautiful, amazing discourses on spiritual growth, enlightenment, consciousness, ascension. Whew. So finally, the source, to make a long story short, tells me, you know, I finally had an out-of-body experience. And one of the things that you want to do when you go out-of-body, if you're a guy at least, is it's your desire body, it's your subconscious, so you want to have sex, right? So I tried to conjure up a partner. And then I would be standing there with my pants down, and then there'd be all these people standing around pointing at me laughing. And I was like, okay, well, you know, if I'm going to get humiliated this much, maybe sex isn't such a good idea in the out-of-body plane. But then it seemed like I found this one woman, and things started to go pretty well. And she took me back to her room, and I'm like, wow, now we're getting somewhere. But then she had a roommate in the room, this guy, and it's like the room is a mess. And so I start trying to convince them, hey, look, you know, I'm out of body. None of this is real. Watch this. And I took my hand and shook it and turned it into a bowling ball and then detached it and rolled it down the hallway. And then when I do that, they just kind of like dissociate and they wouldn't look at me. And then if I'd stop trying to do stuff like that, they'd come back. But when I try to tell them I was out of body, they would like lose track of my talking. So I finally said, isn't there somebody who knows what the hell is going on around here? Right? And I turn around and there's this woman and she's just looking at me with this incredibly serene face. And she's got gray hair and a purple dress. And she's standing there and she's not saying anything and I realize I'm paralyzed. I can't move. And I'm looking at her like, okay, what's going on? I can't move. And I keep waiting for something to happen. And I'm getting really freaked out, you know, because I'm paralyzed. She goes, you know you have to move, don't you? Well, I know you said something about Virginia Beach and da-da-da. And as soon as I said Virginia Beach, it was like I was free. And then this other woman comes out. I go down a hallway and there's all these doors and a door opens and this woman comes out and she says, you're from Bloomingtown. That means you're blooming, doesn't it? And I lived in a town called Bloomington. So I'm like, all right, I guess I got to move to Virginia Beach. So it wasn't easy. I had $700, threw all my stuff in the car, drove down there, got a list from the ARE, Association for Research Enlightenment, the Casey organization. And this guy who I'd connected with, Francis Spohr, the art director of Venture Inward magazine, the Edgar Casey magazine, says, I have got to meet you as soon as you get here. And, okay. Because I told him I was doing these readings and stuff, right? And I walk in, he walks up to the door because I ended up renting a room from his friend who lived in the condo across the way from his. And he opens up the door and he looks at me and he goes, my God, it is unbelievable. It's me. What are you talking about? He's like, you look exactly like Edgar Casey. Exactly. Oh, man. You know, I'd already had this experience before I left from New York, in which there happened to be the only Northeast ARE study group was just a few miles away from my house. This guy, Skip Weatherford, was running it. And he secretly, you know, we were having these study group meetings in public, and he didn't want me to tell them, but on the side we were doing these hypnosis sessions where he would hypnotize me, and I would end up channeling, and I was reading his mind. I would answer questions that he would ask before he would ask them out loud. And at one point, apparently, he said, well, it's so strange that you can do this. And apparently in the channel, I opened up my eyes and I looked at him and I said, it is by nature of the continuity of consciousness that I can do this. It freaked him out because my eyes are black, you know, they're just like, it didn't look right. But that was also strange because I had these two crystals I would use under my hands when I do the reading. I put my hands on the crystals and exactly as I did, this bolt of energy comes out of the wall from a wire, like about this long. And then he said, as soon as I left after that day, all the power in the house went off for exactly 1 hour. So strange things were going on like that. And then one day he says, you got to come over to my house right now. Right now. I'm serious. Right now. Okay, fine. So I go over there and he's got this magazine and there's a cutout in the middle of the magazine with a picture in it. And the picture is of a face and the face looks exactly like my face. And he says, throws it down on the desk, says, who's that? I'm thinking, okay, well, I've never been published. I've never been printed. It's clearly my face. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, all right, it's got to be the ARE magazine because it's got that pencil style that they use on the cover. Edgar Casey. Yeah, but who else does it look like? Oh, man. So I'm just like, I do not want to be Edgar Casey, okay? So then, but then I get this out-of-body thing. You know you have to move, don't you? And then you're from Bloomingtown. That means you're blooming, aren't you? And all this stuff happens, and so I go to Virginia Beach. The next thing you know, Francis is saying, I got to get you a meeting with Robert Smith, the director of the Venture Inward magazine. So we go to this Nawab Indian restaurant, which is down in Virginia Beach, a few streets back from the oceanfront. I forget what the street is. Anyway, apparently I was sitting in the restaurant and I turned over and looked at him like this. And there's a picture of Edgar Cayce working at his desk and turning and smiling. So he walks in the restaurant and I look at him like this. And it's the spitting image of the photograph. And he says to me, you know, he eventually confessed. He was trying to stay cool. He said, when I saw your face, I almost fell over backwards. You are exactly the same as Edgar Cayce in the way you look. Long story short, I ended up meeting everybody in the ARE. I'm living with a guy who's a Cayce scholar. He starts telling me all this stuff about Cayce because I hadn't really read too much about Cayce. I'd read about the Atlantis stuff, which I found fascinating. But other than that, I knew he was psychic and I felt his work could be trusted, but I hadn't really gotten into it because there's, you know, 500, 600 Cayce books. But here's this guy I'm living with now as a result of the ARE contact who had been best friends with Gladys Davis, who was Cayce's apparently soulmate and secretary. I heard all the inside stories you don't usually hear, including the fact that he'd stepped on a stick and it went through his testicle and one of his testicles was dead. I heard all these stories about what the readings said about Atlantis and how all these people were reincarnations of each other and they kept reincarnating in groups together. And we kept kind of, he kept kind of saying, you know, you're probably Edgar Cayce reincarnated. Oh my God. Then we actually had Tom Johnson, the owner of the Heritage Store, which sells Cayce products, can't come into the house one night. My God, he looks just like Edgar Cayce. Here we go again. Jesus. So finally, he said, my contact, Jim, says to the guy I was living with, says, you got to ask your readings. You can't let this go on much longer. By this point, I knew I could trust them. I finally said, I asked in a very strange way, because when you're in trance, you're trying to get your mind conscious enough that you can actually ask a question, and then you have to sink back down to get the answer. So I said, I would like to incubate a question on my identity here related to Edgar Cayce, because I just couldn't say, was I Edgar Cayce in a past life? Well, the answer comes back. It says, Table Rock, which I don't know why they said that, still don't know. This is our boss. In short, the answer is yes. And you know, then they pulled out the cheesy Spider-Man line, but with the answer comes great responsibility. Oh my God. I was pissed. After I had this reading, I did not want this to be the truth. And then later on, I just said, what the hell? Let me pick up Edgar Cayce's astrology chart, the natal chart, and then compare it to my own chart. It's called a bi-wheel, right? Well, I did that. And we've got moon over moon, Mars over Mars, Mercury over Mercury, Venus over Venus, Sun over Sun, and then Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune are all in these perfect aspect ratios to each other, 30 degrees, 60 degrees, 9 degrees. It was so locked in, precise, we eventually had somebody do an astrology comparison, found out that in a 127-year period after Cayce's death, there's only one time you could possibly be born where it would align that well with his birth chart, and that was my birthday, the exact day, time, location. Furthermore, it was also in the Chinese zodiac year of the ox. The ox. Oh my God. There it is again. So when I saw the natal chart, I literally ran into the bathroom and I'm hovering over the toilet, like ready to throw up, because what do we know about Edgar Cayce? Cayce had a reading that said, in 1998, Ra Ta, the priest, will return. Meaning Cayce's past life in the Atlantis apparently was this guy who helped design the Great Pyramid. He was one of the chief architects of the Great Pyramid. Ra Ta, he was a prophet who foretold the destruction of Atlantis, fled the island, got into Egypt, and then built this monument based on the technology they had and all this stuff, creating a gateway with this higher entity that was called Ra. Now, that's not really in the Cayce readings, except in a few places they mention Ra and Ra-Ta as two different entities in some prayers, which we have in the book. So then the source, tells me, you have to go to the ARE and tell them about this. Oh my God, no way. I finally got dragged kicking and screaming into doing it. I had a meeting with somebody, told him the whole story, and he says, we get somebody in here every week who thinks they're the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. Everybody's hip to this 1998 thing and when he's going to come back. You're just another number. Get out of here, kid. But he also invited me to sell candy bars at a play they were running called Man of La Mancha. He says, well, you know, let's just get you out in the community and see if anybody else recognizes you. So it's a really funny story, anecdote, to say Edgar Cayce returned to the ARE and they gave him a job selling candy bars.
Impersonating Edgar Cayce, right?
Yeah. So the last thing in the world I wanted is to be somebody else. How many Elvis impersonators can you mention by name? It's not like this is an honorable thing for me. The ARE did not take me seriously. In fact, this person was very belittling to me and said, well, you know, I found out through the grapevine that the buzz inside the ARE was like, okay, we know this guy did drugs. We know this guy swears. He's young. He's impressionable. There is no use that we can have of him being Edgar Cayce reincarnated. It doesn't do us any good, because I was only like 24 years old. I mean, I was young, and yet I'd read 500 books, and I'd started to write about this stuff. So in that bitterness of the betrayal from the ARE, I just got more into working with my source, and the source is saying, you have to start taking clients and doing readings for other people. And if you don't do this, you're going to lose the ability to channel. Well, I really didn't want to do that, but by July of 1998, I was in Virginia Beach. Cayce had a dream where he was back in Virginia Beach in 1998. The prophecy had been fulfilled, and I'm like thinking, oh, this is wonderful. I end up starting to take clients. The third client I had, this woman comes in, didn't say anything about herself whatsoever. She just sat down and wanted to start the reading. I'm like, well, I really don't want to do that, but okay. I wake up out of the reading, and she's totally in tears. She said, your reading described exactly what's going on with my husband, the fact that we're living in opposite ends of the house, you know, why we're fighting, what I'm going to have to do to make it better. I'm just so blown away. I can't thank you enough. Da, 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 da. So, you know, you get this stage fright, but then once it started, it just happens, and it just flows through you. So then the source is saying, well, the other part of the deal was not only do you have to do readings for people, but you have to write a book. I didn't want to write a book either. I finally got a website in February 1999. I had written up some of my preliminary research into Ascension in 1998. I got online in February 99, and in a relatively short time laid out the case, including the photographic comparison of myself to Edgar Cayce, started to get some interest on the internet, but I really didn't want to write a book and I didn't want to be known for that. I got hired on in 2000 to this thing called Time of Global Shift, which was a seminar tour about ascension, and I was presenting scientific information about 2012 and planetary change. I started to have conferences, and I got on Art Bell, as I said. It was a short visit, then I had another visit again. Long story short, along comes December 2000, or May 2001, Dr. Stephen Greer Disclosure Project. I'd gotten on Art Bell now. I was doing these readings. I had a website. I was making all my money from taking clients, barely surviving because I charged very little at the time. I'm now not doing readings anymore. That's an important thing to point out because I have demand inundation, which some people would call a happy problem, but it got to the point that so many people wanted readings, I just couldn't possibly fill it. I go to the Disclosure Project, and I meet 39 top secret witnesses to the UFO thing. And one of them was Sergeant Clifford Stone, who had experienced a direct encounter with extraterrestrials. And they said, well, he asked them, what's in it for me? And they said, a new world if you can take it. I remember that. You know, that's what they've been telling me, too. So by this point, I had a public presence. I didn't really talk about the reincarnation too much. I'm at this conference. And I'm meeting all these black ops guys, and it starts to become clearer and clearer the extent to which this UFO scenario is really true. I mean, when you're in the room, I was in the May 10th briefing, which was closed executive summary for members of Congress and VIPs. I happened to be a VIP because I was a public figure in the UFO field. Didn't have any money, wasn't really well known, but fine. So that event really transformed me and got me my first exposure to black ops people. One guy who had a reading, Winfrey, wanted to write a book, and it didn't happen until years later that I allowed this to be done, but we finally wrote this book called The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And that's, I didn't want to give him a very good picture of me because I didn't want my face to be the cover, so they used the picture, but it had to be really small inside this little nebula. And this book sold pretty darn well for a while. For a while, this was the third best-selling title in Frog's entire New Age catalog. As I went on and got more involved with my source, I realized that I was in contact with this same source, Ra. Now, this is, if you think we've gone off the deep end before now, just you wait, because we're only getting started. This source said that it is in the sixth dimension, or sixth density, and that at that level, we all have a higher self, which is this part of us millions of years more evolved than we are, which travels back in time to help us get to the future, to help us spiritually grow. Because let's say that you have a future self that you're going to be, and here's who you are now, and there's a finite number of steps that you have to make to get from here to there. Well, the steps can't be changed, but what if it's like an accordion and you can fold time so that you can make those steps in shorter amount of linear time? That's what the higher self's job is, to teach you spiritually so that you can get there faster. Well, they said that they're at the sixth dimensional level where the higher self is. At that point, you have an entire planet worth of beings who have fused into one consciousness. But it's not like the Borg, like the nasty hive mind thing. This is a positive thing where everybody's thoughts are one. They said they originally started out on the planet Venus 1.5 billion years ago, that it was like Earth and it had people like us, that they evolved and they grew through fourth dimension, fifth dimension, they were now in the sixth dimensional level. Now, there would be no reason why I would believe something so far out as this, except that this data that was in this book, scientifically speaking, correlated with so many other things I had researched, which only came out after the material was channeled in 1981. So how is that possible unless there's something authentic happening? And then I started to have personal relationships with the source. Let me tell you one very interesting story. A woman was having UFO visitations in her apartment. She'd be lying there in bed with her husband in the middle of the night, and there'd be this beaming light coming in the window, and entities would appear in the room, sometimes take her on board the ship. So she found my website, wanted to have a reading. Well, what I would do at that time is I would sleep on it, and I'd wake up in the morning with a dream and then do the reading, and then I'd call the person that afternoon, tell them for 15 minutes, which always ended up being an hour, what the reading said, and then send them a tape in the mail. So I called her up the day after the reading. She knew when it was going to be, and she said, "Did you dream anything last night?" "Oh, yeah." I said, "Yeah, I had this dream where I was stuck inside a giant cathedral." She starts losing it, sobbing, going crazy on the other end of the phone. I'm like, "Are you okay? What is going on here?" She said, "Last night, it happened again." "What happened?" "The light. Outside the window?" "Yeah." "And?" "Well, this man showed up in the room. And he was in a white robe with the gray hair." "I know that guy." "He said, 'I'm going to tell you something very important. You need to write it down, or else you won't remember.'" She says, "Okay." He says, "Remember the giant cathedral." So then and she just went nuts. I mean, it was crazy. And so I said, "Okay, well, I guess this source can make house calls in certain cases." Later on, I'm in North Carolina visiting a friend, again, an ARE person, who's very into the idea of Edgar Cayce coming back. And I'm out in the field meditating. And, you know, you get to a state of divine indifference where you really don't care about anything except the oneness and the peace of that moment. And I open up my eyes and I see this disc in the sky, right? And it goes behind a cloud and the cloud blows away and the disc is gone. Oh, wow. Now I've seen a UFO. I always wanted to see one of those. Okay. The only other thing that I always wanted to happen that now should happen is I need to have a ball of light come into my room and give me an intelligent message. So then I kept meditating, didn't think anything more of it. Call up my father a couple days later. You'll never guess who's on the other end of the telephone. I say, let me guess, my brother. Yeah. Like, Dad, you realize that this is psychic ability, right? Oh, yeah, your ESP thing, whatever. I mean, you know, I actually did eventually prove to my dad that something was going on because he worked at a publishing office and he had this woman there and I didn't know anything about her. And I walked up to her, held her hand, looked in her eyes, told her whole life story. And I can do that. When I meet somebody new, I can go into this place and I just tell them their life story and it gets tears and it gets intense and it's really powerful. It's the easiest time to read somebody's when you first meet them before your mind is colored with any new data. So my brother is talking on the other line, and I say, yeah, I had this really cool thing where I was out in the field meditating and I see this tiny little disc looking thing, like a metallic thing, and it went behind the cloud and then the cloud blew away and it was gone. And if it was an airplane, it would have kept on going, but it disappeared. It's like, oh, I always knew there had to be UFOs. I mean, I'm sure this is real, but who cares? The only other thing I said was that I needed a ball of light to appear in my room and give me an intelligent message. My brother goes, what did you say? A ball of light, appear in my room, give me an intelligent message. He said, oh my God, what's going on? The other night, I was in my room, and I was meditating, and my head started dropping back like this, and I see this ball of light appear in the room. And it gradually lasted 10 minutes. It spread into this vortex on the ceiling that was all like different shades of luminous blue. In the middle, it was almost like lightning colored, and then it just got dimmer and dimmer, but there were these layers of it, like ripples on a pond. And it formed this vortex, this cone that was going up into the air. And then I kept watching this, and it finally faded out and formed a kidney-shaped energy between myself and my girlfriend. She had insomnia, and after this happened, she was able to sleep every night without any trouble. As it was fading, I didn't really want it to go away. I was in such ecstasy. I'm like, this incredible thing is happening to me. And as it was leaving, I heard these words in my mind. And it said, the ascension that your brother is writing about will not happen all at once. It is an experience of cosmic connection to the universe that comes in a sequence of events, increasingly uplifting and amazing. You have just experienced the first of these events. Wow.
Wow. Great.
So it was like, They administratively found a way to get this message, which changed how I was talking about ascension, because I always thought of it as kind of like this big switch that was going to go off in the future. And the Law of One series, the source of all this stuff that I was studying, said 2012, sometime between 2011 and 2013. This was back in 1981, before people were talking about the Mayan calendar or knew what the end date of the Mayan calendar was, but they gave the same time coordinates.